well-regulated militia be necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. Hope you had a very happy Easter weekend. I did. I was up in, and this is going to sound weird, because I was up in Massachusetts, which is not generally a happy place for gun owners, but there was a great dinner on Saturday night. The battle continues, 250th anniversary of the Battle of Lexington and Concord, and the Gun Owners Action League in Massachusetts doing it right with a huge celebration, raising money for the Civil Rights Coalition, raising money for the Gun Owners Action League, and hundreds of gun owners getting together to honor those Minutemen who stood at Lexington Green, who stood across the Old North Bridge there in Concord and fought for our freedom. The shot heard around the world. And, of course, the years fighting for our independence that followed. So we're going to talk about what happened this past weekend. Carrie Ann O'Claire from Gun Owners Action League, who is the MC on Saturday night's event, is going to be with us, as is Toby Leary from the Civil Rights Coalition. He was one of the speakers there, along with, it was a stellar lineup. Adam Kraut, Doug Hamlin from NRA. Adam Kraut, obviously, executive director from Second Amendment Foundation. Jared Yanis from Guns and Gadgets. Colonel Alan West was the keynote speaker. Dick Heller speaking as well. Am I missing anybody? I spoke, but you probably figured that out already. I think that was the full lineup, but it was just an incredible event. I got to thank Jim Wallace from the Gun Owners Action League for the invitation. I could not think of a better place to be on the 250th anniversary of Lexington and Concord than, well, we weren't there in Concord or Lexington. We were in Boxborough, Massachusetts, but really not far away. As I said during my speech, Boxborough was not a town in 1775, but there were 21 individuals who lived in the area who basically joined up with the Acton Massachusetts militia and marched on Concord and took part in the fighting that took place the afternoon of April 19th. I did not have a chance to get out to Lexington and Concord that day. That Saturday, I flew in, got there mid-morning. Thank you to Charlie Cook from Riding Shotgun with Charlie for letting me ride shotgun with him all weekend long as he ferried me about. We did have a chance to go by the Old North Bridge on Sunday. And it wasn't as packed. It wasn't as crazy. Now, I missed all the festivities, but I still did get to walk that hallowed ground, and it was absolutely amazing. So thank you again to Jim Wallace. But I want to talk about what this event was all about, why it was held, and what the folks from the Gun Owners Action League, as well as the Civil Rights Coalition, thought about this event. So let's get things started. Here is my conversation with Carrie Ann O'Claire from the Gun Owners Action League. Take a look and a listen. Carrie Ann, thanks so much for coming on the program today. It's so good to see you again.
Yes, thank you for having me. What a great past weekend we had.
Oh, my God. It was incredible. And it was great to actually meet you in person for the first time. And I got to say, you did a fantastic job emceeing. From singing the national anthem, I didn't realize you had such pipes on you, quite honestly. Leading the crowd in the recitation of the Second Amendment and maybe most importantly, keeping all of us speakers on time and on track so that we weren't there until midnight. Because, some of us can talk for 3 hours at a time. So thank you for making sure that you reeled us all in. You kept us on track. And I hope that you were as pleased with how things went on Saturday as I was, because I was absolutely blown away. I thought it was just an amazing night.
Yep. I think you could probably tell by the speech that I gave at the end on how much I really truly appreciated everybody being there. I know this sounds really strange, but I feel like God was in that room and the Sons of Liberty, their spirits were there with us as well. And I don't know about you, but I felt that, and I felt that was guiding me through the night as well. And I know I was so nervous and so scared of just messing something up, and it flowed so brilliantly. And I really truly believe too, it was you, the speakers helped as well. And the fact that I know many of those speakers and I felt very comfortable with them, and you all are friends, and that helped, that totally helped. But what a powerful message, all of us standing up and reciting that Second Amendment together, that it was, to me, it was like our voices was the shot heard around that world that day. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when you talk about people coming together, I mean, one of the great things that I thought about Saturday night was, and I kind of touched on this, you know, we think about the Minute Man, right? That individual. And if you go to Concord, you see that statue and it's one man standing there with his musket, right? But if it was one guy against the British Army, would be, you know, singing Hail to the King, right? Today. It took a community. It took, you know, people coming together to fight back against tyranny. And what you saw in that room, not only the, you know, hundreds of gun owners, Action League members who were there on hand, but you had folks from the NRA, you had folks from Gun Owners of America, you had folks from the Second Amendment Foundation who were all on hand. And again, it's that Second Amendment community, right, that came together. And it was great to see, you know, all of these folks from, you know, whether it's the folks on the litigation side, the lobbying side, the education and training side, you know, all of these different components that make up how we fight to keep our Second Amendment rights intact, how we claw back our Second Amendment rights in states like Massachusetts, where, you know, sadly, those rights have been lost. Again, I, you know, again, you talk about that spirit of 75 that was in the room, right? And you really could feel it. And I think that was a big part of it, is just to see such a broad cross section of the 2A community on hand, under one roof, in one room, and gathering for that common cause.
And I think Colonel West said it brilliantly. I can't remember exactly for word what he said, but he said that there was 252 people in that room. 77 men stood on that battlefield that very day. About seven, I believe, seven or eight lost their lives. So if you think about that, if you really just think about that, that blows your mind. And I was at the reenactment, but I unfortunately couldn't see it. There was, we got there at 4:10 in the morning and there was already people right against that field. So we watched it live on our phone. I tried to tippy toe and see if I could get over the crowd. But Robert Burke did, he volunteered to video the whole entire thing. And so he has it on his YouTube channel. And he gave us the footage from the event as well. But I was just watching it as I was getting ready for the show. And there was one thing that the whole thing choked me up. I watch it now and I still get emotional about it. Was the realization that, can you imagine the women that had to evacuate their kids? And they had a lot of kids back then, you know, and how scared that must have been for them, saying goodbye to their husbands, their brothers, you know, their sons, and as their whole family possibly is going on that field and they're just taking their baby and the rest of the families on the field fighting. I just can't imagine that emotion. Imagine that moment in time.
Right. I mean, you know, absolutely, because, you know, we look back at it and Saturday was a celebration, right? But it was terrifying.
Right.
In that moment. Right. They had no idea what the outcome was going to be. They had no idea where this was going to lead. This was, you know, that defining moment of, we have to take a stand. But our world is changing. Right. The world will never be the same after that. And whether it was thinking about, you know, the Massachusetts colony at the time, or whether it was thinking about their own family and how their family would be forever changed. And it really was. It was a scary time that day in 1775. And, you know, I talked in my speech about the women of Pepperell, Massachusetts, who ended up taking muskets up on their own after the men marched off to Concord. They formed their own militia and they that patrolled awesome. The town. Right. And
I didn't know that until you said that. I'm like, I looked at my husband. I'm like, oh.
I think maybe Gun Owners Action League they need the Pepperell Brigade, you know, for women's outreach. But that's the thing. You know, there are so many of those stories. Right. That's one of the things I love about history, is when you start to drill down and you get down to those individuals. Right. You know, that to me is when history really comes alive. And we heard some great stories from Colonel West. We heard some fantastic stories. Toby Leary, as a history nerd, I got to say, I loved the fact that so many of the speakers, you know, it really did embrace the moment and the history of that moment.
We had amazing speakers that night. Cam, Dick Heller, Toby. Oh, my gosh. And then Doug Hamlin, excuse me. Mm-hmm. It just blows your mind how many people wanted to be in that room.
Yeah.
And the power that was there behind a mic was just incredible. So,
well, and the power in the seats, I got to say, I mean, I met so many great folks for the very first time. I met firearms instructors. I met individuals who, you know, were gun owners who've acted in self-defense. I met some grassroots activists like Mo. And Mo's going to get a second. Mo's going to get a special shout out later on in the show too. But, you know, I want folks to understand, I mean, the Gun Owners Action League, there's a reason why I've gone to so many events over the years, even though I live in Virginia, and it's because what you all are doing there in Massachusetts, I think really can be an inspiration for the rest of the country. The you know, we talk a lot about community in this interview, but there is a community within the Gun Owners Action League. And it's almost a family, right, Carrie-Anne?
Oh, yes, it truly is a family. And I feel like I found where I belong. I can't even explain it. Like, even, you know, like, 10 years ago when I started this, and then started on Women of America like 6 years ago, right? And then the Women for Gun Rights 4 years ago. I found my family and I found where I belong. I wish I found them sooner. And it is such an incredible, incredible journey, and incredible to be part of a community like this. You don't feel alone, you know? And can you imagine if 600,000 gun owners in Massachusetts got up and created that bond with each other,
right?
How we would win.
Absolutely.
We would win.
Absolutely. And I know that that's, you know, that's a continued effort, and we're not going to get all 600,000, but, you know, we can get more, and hopefully, you know, I mean, I hate why I say hopefully, but hopefully the infringements that we are seeing in Massachusetts are going to cause more gun owners to wake up. I mean, you all have already, you know, been able to put the repeal of Chapter 135 on the ballot next November. The Civil Rights Coalition did amazing work. But again, the Civil Rights Coalition, there are a lot of goal members who are out there getting signatures, making sure that, you know, this was going to be on the ballot. So you guys are really doing incredible work in incredibly difficult circumstances there. And I want to ask, I mean, now that the dinner is over and you've been working on this for months, what's next on your agenda, Carrie? Besides, catching up on some sleep.
Yeah. No kidding. I was like, I was on a high, and I stayed up to 12:30 that night, you know, just soaking in that moment. And even yesterday, and I finally crashed last night, I'm like, I'm going to bed. But now I think what I know Garrett is working on, and what I'm working on, is trying to get the video, get it edited, so everybody can see it across the world. And I'm hoping that when they see this event, they realize, first off, not everybody could be there because it was Easter weekend. But if you didn't want to go, maybe you're going to say, I should have went. And I hope that every other state that's going through what we're going through, and maybe the states that are not necessarily going through what we're going through, recognizes that we need to work together. And I'm hoping that other organizations that are state driven, like GOAL, can, like, it would be amazing if we could all get on a Zoom once a month, all of us as organizations, nationally and state driven, and just have like a powwow and say, hey, what can we do to help you? Well, this is what we're going through. Okay, great. I'll share what's happening. I think if we did that, that would also be a huge movement.
Absolutely. You know, and again, harkening back to the committees of correspondence, right, in the early 1770s, and the groups that coordinated and communicated throughout the state of Massachusetts, they didn't have Zoom, right? I mean, if they could get it done back then, and we've got all of these technological tools available to us today, absolutely. I would love to see something like that, too. But I got to say, Carrie-Anne, again, and I know it wasn't just you. There was a lot of great volunteers And you mentioned Garrett, who did a fantastic job putting together the video, Masoud Ayoub narrating the introductory video. Honestly, I mean, everybody at Gold did such an amazing job, and it was such an incredible night. So thank you again for letting me be a part of it. I said Saturday night there was no place that I would have rather been, and I absolutely mean that. That was just a perfect evening.
And I do have to give a shout out to my family, too, because I sacrificed a lot of time from them with this event, and they saw it. And it was really emotional for me because my daughter came up to me and she gave me a big hug and she goes, "Mom, you're doing so good." And it just brought tears to my eyes. I'm like, because it made me realize that we're doing the right thing with our children by teaching them this. Our generation needs to see this. And so I also want to give a big shout out to John Mulwinney from the Civil Rights Coalition, because he was like right beside me the whole time helping me. Everybody, there were so many volunteers that night and so many people that I couldn't do this without them. And the courage that they gave me and the well wishes and you got this, you can do this, you're going to do this, you're going to be fine, you know. And then just having, again, you there and all the amazing speakers, really, it all just pulled together. And so I just want to thank every single person that was in that room as well, because without, you know, an event wouldn't be an event without anybody that was there that day. And the Patriots that stood up and really sung the national anthem with me, that was pretty incredible too. So, and I appreciate you having me on, and so I could talk about this, because I could talk about this for another hour.
Well, we're going to be talking with Toby Leary next. So, and I'm really glad to know that that there is going to be video available so that the folks who are not in the room are going to get a chance to see it. Yeah. I will say, you know, I don't know if you're going to get the same chills that we got watching the video, but if nothing else, it should serve as an enticement. The next time the Gunners Action League has an event going on, you want to be there. You don't have to live in Massachusetts. You can make the drive. You can fly in. And Carrie Ann, again, you know, just thank you, and thank the rest of the folks at Goal.
I will.
Thank those volunteers for them, because this really was a special night and it was a special weekend, and I'm so glad I was able to be a part of it.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you so much.
I got to tell you, Carrie Ann was an absolute rock star on Saturday night. If you have not had the chance to listen to her speak, do so at the next opportunity, because it was absolutely incredible. As I mentioned, Toby Leary from the Civil Rights Coalition, also one of the speakers there. And Toby put together this incredible item that was auctioned off, a modern-day musket that was inscribed with the names of those patriots who were killed on Lexington Green. It was emblazoned, had a challenge coin embedded in the stock, had the join or die illustration that Benjamin Franklin came up with in, what was it, 1757, I guess. That was kind of burned into the stock as well. A lot of other engraving. It was absolutely beautiful. And that was auctioned off to raise money for the Civil Rights Coalition, which, of course, is challenging Chapter 135 in Massachusetts. And I asked Toby, you want to come on the show on Monday and talk about it? He said, yeah. So here you go. Take a look and listen to our conversation with Toby Leary from the Civil Rights Coalition. Toby, thanks very much for coming on the show. It's good to see you again.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, and long time no see.
Yeah, right. Well, it was great to actually like finally meet you in person. I was we just talked with Carrie Ann O'Claire, and Saturday was the first time I'd had a chance to meet her too. And you know, it's I mean, we talk all the time, but actually being able to connect in person, there's, you know, there's something special about that, and it's one of the great things about what happened on Saturday. And I don't know about you, but I mean, I walked out of there Saturday night just blown away. I thought it was just an incredible evening.
I can't agree with you more. I was pumped up. I was excited. I was refreshed and renewed, if you will. And there was just such a great energy there. And I think that everybody I've spoke to felt the same way, and felt like, hey, man, I'm not in this alone. Let's get this started and hit the ground running, you know?
Absolutely. And, yeah. You know, while this was a Gun Owners Action League event, the Civil Rights Coalition, obviously a critical group right now. And there are a lot of Goal members who are a part of the Civil Rights Coalition. And during the auction portion of the evening, there was this incredible musket that was up for auction. And I mean, this was your baby, right?
Yeah. Actually, it was Jim Wallace's idea. He's like, you guys should make a musket and auction it off. And I'm like, that's brilliant, you know? And so we Bill Bashant from Bashant Firearms here in Massachusetts donated a Dixie Gunworks reproduction flintlock. I was asking around, anyone have one, you know, and I thought it would be, you know, incredibly appropriate to try to make one as period as possible. And so he gave it to us. He goes, it's used. It looks used. And I said, don't worry about it. We're going to strip this down and make it something special. And my gunsmiths knocked it out of the park. I mean, they really did. They took it right down to bare metal. They engraved with period scroll work all over it, put the 8 names of the men who died on the Battle of Lexington green there that morning, fateful morning, and wrote 2025 and 1775, little poem on the top about commemorating the battle. There's little things that you can see and find all over the rifle, the little Betsy Ross flag, which I know isn't period, but, and someone had given me a We the People challenge coin, which we inlaid in the side. So that was kind of neat. And then they Cerakoted the whole thing. I just think they did a great job and brought to life what happened on that day and commemorated it really. And it was a big hit. So I was appreciative of that, you know?
Yeah, it was a big hit. So yeah. I think that I was out of the room for the first part of the auction. So if I get anything wrong, you got to correct me here. But do I understand correctly that the first winner actually donated the musket back?
Yeah, it was a little confused. I think even the auctioneer was a little confused, but I think basically he said, look, let's try and get some more. He was trying to get some more money out of this rifle. He was the high bidder at $10,000, and he basically said, auction it again. And so he threw out the first bid of an additional $1,775, which basically would make the rifle at $11,775, you know, which is obvious for obvious reasons of the date. And so he did end up buying it again the second time, but I think he was hoping that a buying war would ensue again, which really did lead it up to that initial $10,000. So that was pretty special. And I don't know what he ended up writing the final check for. We'll find out. But it was pretty cool. And I talked to him afterward and he said, look, this is a very worthy event. And the Civil Rights Coalition is doing the work, boots on the ground, and we need to fund it. And so I was very appreciative of that. He doesn't even live in Massachusetts. So he understands, hey, this is where the battle is. And that's where it all started. That was the whole point of Saturday.
Right.
Is, you know, this is where it started. And like, this is where the battle continues, is right here in Massachusetts. And, you know, so I think it was a good start to phase two of the Civil Rights Coalition's ballot committee to really educate and raise money and start the campaign, because this is going to be a very expensive campaign going over the next 18 months to try to convince 1.5, 1.6 million people in Massachusetts that their rights are worth preserving.
Absolutely. And, you know, to even present that question on the ballot next November, I think is a victory. And something, I mean, we know it's a victory because we can just look at what Governor Healey did in response to this, right? I mean, as soon as the signatures were turned in, she signs this emergency preamble months after, you know, she signed the initial bill, put it into effect immediately, and then suspending major portions of the law that she just declared had to go into effect right away because of an emergency. I mean, you know, and she did that so that this law would not be suspended until voters have a chance to decide whether or not to keep this law in place. Right. So, I mean, the thumb on the scale of injustice, I think, has been present throughout this tortured process of enacting Chapter 135. And as you say, now the campaign shifts, right? Now it's about educating the public as to why this is such a bad bill, why this process of putting this law on in place was such an affront to democracy. You know, right. I mean, and I know that nothing that she did is illegal under Massachusetts law, but the parlor tricks that were played, the parliamentary games that were used whether it was, you know, reassigning this bill, like three different bill numbers, the lack of public hearings, you know, the way that the sausage was made here, Toby, should, I mean, I, to me, it should, and pardon my language, if you're listening at home, cover your kids' ears, it should piss off everybody who cares about representative democracy, because this was just a giant middle finger to gun owners throughout this entire process.
Yeah, and I understand what you mean about the process that she took, the Article 48 under the Mass Constitution. She has the right to do this. However, I would actually say that the part of the bill that is extremely, I guess I would call it illegal under the Constitution, is the fact that there's no authority or privilege in the Constitution or the state constitution or any founding era document that grants the right to these politicians to do what they did. So the actual infringement itself is contrary to the protections laid out of the Constitution. And even in, you know, with Heller and Bruin and all the cases that reaffirmed that we have these protections. So the actual acts that they did are intolerable acts yet again, like what happened, you know, 250 plus years ago with Britain doing the same thing. And I was trying to draw parallels to that during my speech on Saturday night, which was basically they banned importation. Well, shoot, we've seen that before here, starting in 1968 and then again in 1988. And we saw it in 1986 to a certain extent. We saw it in 1989. And there's always some non-sporting rifle ban, right? And then we see restrictions of ownership without a license or without a license to sell back into the state of Massachusetts all 250 years ago. So this is just a regurgitation of the same tired old playbook that led to the foundation of America. And I would say once America was formed and the Constitution put in place with protections and even Supreme Court precedent affirming those protections, they are way outside their boundaries. They're beyond their constitutional limits of power. And ironically, we all saw the signs on Saturday, no king, no tyrants, but yet they themselves are acting the part of king and tyrant, trying to finish the job of King George III. And I love what you said Saturday night about, and you just mentioned it there, how she did the very act by signing this emergency preamble and then couldn't implement the law that had to go into effect. It's madness. It really is. And they're all telling you at the same time that it's for our own protection, it's for our own safety. And it's like, you know, I've read how that story ends and it's never good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, as for, you know, it's for our own safety, as I was saying before we started talking here with the mics recording us, as Charlie Cook from Riding with Shotgun was taking me to the airport yesterday, we're driving down Storrow Drive in Massachusetts, and he's pointing out, you know, oh, there's Harvard and there's MIT. And I see three or four Massachusetts State Police SUVs just tearing ass the other way, you know, lights and sirens going. And I just looked, I found a story today. There was apparently a shooting at the T station, the metro station there at Harvard. I don't think anybody's been arrested yet. But, you know, again, all of these gun laws that are in place in Massachusetts, they're not stopping bad guys. They're not even aimed at stopping bad guys, right? They're aimed at stopping your customers. They're aimed at stopping you from exercising a fundamental civil right, making it so costly, so legally dangerous that people will throw up their hands and say, man, it's just not worth it. I'm not going to do it.
Yeah. And I actually think it's a whole lot more nefarious than that. They need this violence to constantly have the messaging, see, this is why we need more common sense gun control, right? And the sad fact is we see the shooting down at FSU last week, and you see all the same tired old stories of how, like, if it wasn't for easy access to guns, if it wasn't for, you know, not having universal background checks, et cetera, which we all know would have done nothing to thwart this type of a shooting. But really, the one thing that they could have done, which is end gun-free zones, right? That's the elephant in the room that no one wants to talk about. And yet they don't do anything to proffer or change that. And so they just continue with the insanity because they need the message in order to get the low information person out there. And that's exactly what we're up against here in Massachusetts, is to disrupt that age-old message that guns bad, you're bad for having them and wanting them, and how dare you decide to protect yourself with them when it's making our place less safe, our country, our state, our communities less safe. And nothing could be further from the truth. And as you mentioned, this whole law is directed at controlling the behavior of the most peaceful, lawful people in America instead of the people that are hostile to freedom, that are hostile to safety, that are hostile to peace, the violent felon, the career criminal, the people who have easy access to guns by the street. And the fact that they're out on personal recognizance time and time again on the revolving door justice system and to reoffend, here we go. It's like the definition of insanity, right? So anyway, we're going to have to wake some people up and tell them, hey, this isn't about the Second Amendment. This is about all of our enumerated rights, because if Congress or a state house, a president or a governor thinks that they can just sign away our freedoms that are acknowledged in the Constitution by our brilliant founders, come from God, then we didn't have rights to begin with. They can just be their privileges that are granted by man and changed at whim with a simple majority and a signature. It's scary to think people are so willing to go down that road.
Absolutely. And listen, and I don't want you to tip your hat or anything, or tip your hand, but have you thought about what that messaging is going to look like for the Civil Rights Coalition over the next year and a half? Because I mean, Massachusetts is a blue state, right? You can't just depend on conservatives to get out there and overturn this law, right? You've got to talk to some bleeding heart liberals. You've got to talk to some people who, call themselves progressives. How have you thought about how you tailor that message so that it's going to resonate not just with gun owners like ourselves, but as you say, people who care about their First Amendment rights, people who care about their Fourth Amendment rights, but maybe don't think much about their right to keep and bear arms?
No, that's a great question. And yes, we've been thinking about this quite a bit. And there's two different things. Well, there's more than two, but one of the main ways we're going to do this is to bootstrap it to the audit question that just passed last November on our ballot. It was a ballot question. The state auditor put it to the voters because the legislature is saying, we're not going to allow the state auditor to come in and audit the legislature. They talk about lack of transparency. So she put it out to the voters. 72% of the voters of Massachusetts, this is Republican, Democrat, middle, left, right, everybody was like, we want transparency. 72% approved her ballot initiative and said, audit the legislature. What are you hiding? If you got nothing to hide, you got nothing to worry about. And the legislature isn't doing it. They refuse to abide by the will of the people. And they're flushing themselves out to be the tyrants that they say they aren't. And people are starting to see it. They're starting to wake up and go, holy cow, 72% of us want this. And you're ignoring us. You're saying, no, you're not going to do it. And they're like trying to make something like, oh, well, we'll bring some other group in. No, we have a state auditor. That's their job. And that we voted for it. Now do it. Honor the will of the people. You pound on the pulpit all the time and say that you're the party who protects democracy and everything's a threat to democracy. But yet here you are threatening actual democracy in action. So we're going to bootstrap to that for sure and say, if they can do it for the First Amendment, if they can do it for the audit, there is something that you care about in your life. It might not be guns. It might not be the First Amendment. It might not be the audit, but there is something that you care about. And all it takes is a simple majority vote at the state house and a signature by the governor to make your rights fundamentally change. That's not right. You need to protect your rights. You need to protect all your rights. Your rights are worth protecting. And that's how we're going to do it. We're going to take that grassroots message, because, again, we see a lot of protests in Massachusetts right now. People are rising up and saying free speech and blah, blah. The other thing I think they handed us on a silver platter from Saturday, we're standing in the actual Battle of Lexington. And I don't know if Carrie Ann mentioned this, but they have a corralled off area with a sign that says free speech area. And I seriously thought it was a joke. I'm like, there's like a camera somewhere to get people's reactions when they see that you got to be standing in the cattle corral in order to voice your opinion or have free speech or maybe have a protest. And the best part of it, Cam, was it was empty. Like, everybody's like, who's going to stand in a cage and to voice their opinion? They're missing the entire point of what happened 250 years ago. Right. And like saying, you got to contain your free speech into this area. Give me a break. I mean, I think it continually puts in the face of us, we the people, how tyrannical man can become.
Yeah.
And, you know, trying to put you in a cage before you can speak your mind. And we refused to do it. We went right in front of the Minuteman Memorial and had a press conference. And, you know, it was like, I'm not going in the cage to speak my mind. Heck no, that's totally against the whole point of what happened.
So, right. Exactly. Yeah. Look around you. This is the free speech zone, right?
Yeah.
Because we are supposed to live in a free country. Right. All right. So if folks want to help out, Toby, again, you don't have to be in Massachusetts, right? As we well know, to help out the Civil Rights Coalition, how can they get involved?
I think that's a great point, and I appreciate that, because really the concentration of where the battle is happening is in Massachusetts. It is in California. It is in New York. It is in Hawaii. Those 12 or 8 to 10 or 12 states that really have the battle going on. We're fighting the courts. We're fighting the government. We're fighting the executive branch at every turn. That's, you know, ground zero. And so if people are willing to support, who live in the Tennessees and the Georgias and the Floridas and the Texases, so that they don't have to fight this someday in their state, send money to the states that are fighting it. Go to thecivilrightscoalition.com, and we're going to punch way above our weight class and be able to use this money for this grassroots operation to be able to get people the message that they need to hear, the signs that they need to have in their front yards, the bumper stickers that they're going to have, the airtime on radio and TV and retargeted messaging. So there's a lot of, and we're up against big money. We got the Soros, the Bloombergs, the Everytowns, the Moms Demand, the Giffords, all the usual suspects that are well-funded, well-organized, and they're going to pump money into the state because it is a ballot committee. So, but we'll be fine if we have 10% of the money that they have, and we'll be able to mount an exceptionally well done campaign to educate the public on why their rights are worth preserving. So you can go over to thecivilrightscoalition.com. There's a donate button. You can also send checks directly. There's a PO box, and that saves us, I think, about 6 or 7% on the fees involved. So, but we greatly appreciate everyone who's willing to send the money behind the lines so that they don't have to fight it in their state, because this is a cancer that needs to be stopped.
Absolutely. Well, listen, we're going to be talking a lot between now and next November, but Toby, thank you again for everything you do there in Massachusetts. It was really great to connect with you over the weekend. You did an amazing job with your speech. I think, yeah, you got a standing ovation after you were finished. So,
again, local crowd, right?
Well, listen, I but they know you.
Yeah.
They know you, and they know that the work that you're doing. So I think that, honestly, I think that makes it even more special. But again, well, I'm really glad we could connect in person. Glad you could join me today. Congratulations again. And we'll talk again soon.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me, Cam. You bet.
Thanks, Toby. My thanks to Toby. And I'm looking forward to having him back again here in the very near future. You know, before we move on from the weekend's festivities, I got to say, I had the opportunity to meet so many great people. And it really was overwhelming and humbling for me to hear folks say, you know, I listen to the show, I watch the show every day. I had a couple of people say that, you know, I was instrumental in helping them become Second Amendment advocates. And that is, again, I mean, that's just a humbling experience. But there's one person in particular who I met, who was just an absolute delight. And I have to give a shout out to Mo in Massachusetts, who listens every afternoon as she is making dinner for her family. And I've never had the chance to meet Mo before. But again, Cam and Company was one of those programs that really helped lead Mo to organizations like the Gun Owners Action League. And so it was fantastic to meet Mo. And Mo, I just want to say, I hope I get a chance to see you again soon. Thank you, though, for coming up and talking to me. It was absolutely great to see you. Glad I got to give you a hug. Glad you got to give me a hug. And again, next time I'm in Massachusetts at a Gun Owners Action League event, I hope that you'll be there as well. All right, let's move on to today's. You know what? I was going to say today's Armed Citizen Story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. But because we had two interviews today, and I want to make sure that producer Jim is not overwhelmed with show material, let's stick to an Armed Citizen Story only today. And then tomorrow we'll get back to the full lineup of good deeds and recidivist reports and things of that nature. But here is today's Armed Citizen Story from Loras, South Carolina. The headline, Horry County man shot in the leg after allegedly assaulting woman. The man in question, 31-year-old Edward Kennard, he was arrested on March 28th. So this is just now being reported. But it happened a few weeks ago. Charged with first-degree assault and battery as well as burglary in an incident that happened on March 28th when police were called out to a home to investigate a shooting that, again, turned out to be a burglary and an assault. According to police, the victim told officers that she was hanging outside with some friends when Kennard came over. She then reportedly told one of her friends that Kennard was drunk and needed to leave. So everybody left the yard and went back inside the home. Kennard decided to try to follow them inside, even though he was not invited. The victim told police that when her son began having chest pains, sounds like he was anxious about what was going on here, Kennard ended up getting in his face. He was asked and told to leave multiple times, but then escalated things. According to officers, allegedly punching the victim in her neck and then grabbing her to the point that he left bruises. The Horry County PD says that after Kennard got in the son's face once again, the victim then grabbed her gun, shot him in the leg. A arrest warrant that was issued for Kennard states that he had trespassed on the property as well as assaulted that resident. He had also apparently trespassed on the property, assaulted and stolen items in the past from that same property. After he was shot in the leg, he was reportedly taken to a local hospital. And at last report, even though this happened several weeks ago, he is still being held at the County Detention Center on a $200,000 bond. The woman in question, defending herself and her son from this unwanted encounter and this unwanted and unnecessary assault, not facing any charges at all. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. Hey, just a reminder, though, we've got another big week in stores. I was in Boston and Boxborough, Massachusetts last weekend. I'm going to be in Atlanta, Georgia this weekend. I'll be getting up bright and early on Thursday, driving down to the Peach City, and we will be broadcasting from Atlanta in the NRA annual meeting. Friday and Saturday, we'll be at booth 665 as part of the Voices of the Second Amendment in Atlanta. Bearing Arms contributor Tom Knighton is going to be on hand as well. Unfortunately, John Petrolino is not going to be able to make it, but we're going to be doing a lot of interviews all day, Friday and Saturday. If I'm not there at the booth, I soon will be back. Might have to, you know, run out and use the restroom or grab something to eat. And I am hoping to actually spend a couple of hours on the show floor, but we are going to be doing a lot of interviews talking with folks. And I would love for you to stop by and say hi if you're going to be in Atlanta. Again, we're going to be at booth 665 Friday and Saturday. Now, Sunday, unfortunately, I've got to get up bright and early and head back to Central Virginia, the Farmville area. I got to make sure that I pick up my dogs on Sunday afternoon. So Friday and Saturday, make sure that you come by and see us at the booth if you're going to be in Atlanta. All right, we will see you tomorrow with another edition of Bearing Arms Cam & Company. Thank you again for being a part of the program today. Be sure to check out BearingArms.com for the latest Second Amendment news and information throughout the day. Oh, by the way, no news on Snope or Ocean State Tactical once again. Listed for last week's conference. nothing in today's orders list from the Supreme Court, so I guess we'll have a do-over this week once again. But we are getting you caught up on some of the other big news, including Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds signing a bill lowering the age to purchase and carry a firearm from 21 to 18, at least a handgun in the state of Iowa, and much more as well. You can find it all at BearingArms.com. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.